all for joining us today to discuss this trend that we're seeing in the courts. This discussion is on the record, and after opening remarks from our panelists, we'll open the discussion up for questions. Today you'll hear from Jay Timmons, President and CEO of the National Association of Manufacturers, joined by Attorney General Alan Wilson, Attorney General Rutledge, and Attorney General Hunter. So with that, I'll hand it over to Jay Timmons.
Thank you, Lindsay, and thank you all for coming and being here to talk about what we consider a very crucial topic. And I want to thank the three generals for being here as well. As you might know, today is Take Your Kids to School Day, so my kids are upstairs, and instead of trying to use every one of their names, I just said, say hi to the generals. It was a lot easier for my 8 and 6-year-old. As you probably know, the NIM launched our Manufacturers Accountability Project last year, and it was in response to a pretty troubling trend that we're seeing across the country, and that's plaintiff's lawyers, headline-seeking politicians that are teaming up to sue manufacturers and hoping to score a payday. The attorneys general are here because they, like us, are concerned about the effect that these lawsuits have on their states, our legal system, manufacturing, and specifically manufacturing workers. And they also recently signed an amicus brief in the San Francisco and Oakland cases. The frivolous lawsuits, or these frivolous lawsuits, I should say, waste taxpayers' dollars, and frankly, this jackpot justice system is a threat to manufacturing workers, because if the trend continues, quite simply, it could harm manufacturers in all sectors and sizes. So we need to put a stop to it now. The most recent lawsuit comes out of Colorado, it followed multiple cases in California and, of course, Mayor de Blasio's suit in New York. So our focus at the NAM has been to bring transparency to these cases, and we've sent FOIA letters to 9 of the municipalities, and in doing so, we found out that attorneys stand to take home more than 23% of any award that is granted. So it's easy to see why they're encouraging cities and counties to take up these cases. We've also discovered that the cities like New York make very bold claims about what they calculate the damages to that related to climate change would be. They make these claims in their lawsuits, but in their bond offerings, when they're trying to attract people to loan them money, they actually state that they can't predict any such damages. Now that's a big contradiction, obviously, and it raises questions about motives, and quite frankly, it raises questions about integrity. So at the NAM, we want to be a part of the solution, both in ending this troubling trend and also about actually addressing environmental concerns. These lawsuits, they solve nothing, and they only hurt our legal system. At the end of the day, the trial lawyers might be padding their pockets, but these lawsuits will do absolutely nothing for workers, for families, or for the environment. So we're going to keep doing our part here at the NIM to provide transparency and accountability so that manufacturers can focus on delivering innovative technologies and not spending our precious resources fighting frivolous lawsuits. So with that, I'd like to invite our attorneys general to say a few words before we open up for questions. We'll start with South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson. General.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. First off, I want to thank you as well as NAM for providing us this forum to talk about this important issue, this not only this piece of litigation, but the entire philosophy behind it and how it could have an adverse and negative impact on each of our respective states. I'm in South Carolina. We have a very robust manufacturing environment down there. Many of you know that we now have Boeing. Volvo is now building down there. We have Michelin. I mean, we have dozens and dozens of machine and auto manufacturing plants, pharmaceutical manufacturing plants. It has become a major source of our economy in South Carolina. One of the reasons that I looked at this recent amicus that we joined in as a state is because, you know, there's a right way to do the right thing. There's a wrong way to do the right thing. There's a wrong way to do the wrong thing. And in this particular case, I believe this is the wrong way to do the wrong thing. When you look, and earlier today I was talking to someone about a state using state law to dictate national policy, I was corrected. So it's not a state law general. It's a local municipality is using a public nuisance cause of action to determine national energy policy. And while the people of these respective municipalities on the other side of the country may believe that the manufacturing of gas, fuel, whatever, is a nuisance to their communities, in South Carolina, we do not believe that. And I do not think it is an appropriate venue. I kind of joked earlier today. You see policymakers in the halls of Congress and state legislatures that try to legislate this type of policy, and when they fail at legislating it, they try to regulate it. And when they fail at regulating it, they litigate it. And that is where we are right now. I'm of a strong personal view that this is not a justiciable or a lawful question. It's a policy question. It's a political question that should not be determined by the courts. This also violates what I call the tenets of cooperative federalism, where the federal government and states work in tandem with one another, where the federal government gives the states your left and right limits, tells the states this is what you can and can't do, and allows the states, the 50 laboratories, to work within those limits. And this is a situation in which they're violating the tenets of cooperative federalism. And these are reasons why I believe that this motion to dismiss must go through. This is why we joined Amicus in support of it. And this is why we support NAM's position in South Carolina.
Thank you very much. The Attorney General from Oklahoma, Mike Hunter, do you have a few thoughts for us?
Thanks, Jay.
General?
So, by definition, the Attorney General in Oklahoma is the Chief Law Officer of the state. I don't take the position I'm the Chief Law Officer of state government. My view is that I've got responsibility writ large to the state of Oklahoma and all of its citizens. So when I look at the threat that these lawsuits present to our economy, I have an overriding responsibility to address that. And so the disquieting litigation that we see now in a neighboring state, Colorado, in addition to what we see in California, now in New York City, the implications of this for my state, in a word, are pretty terrifying. One out of every four jobs in Oklahoma are attributable to the energy industry. And when you include all manufacturing in the state, it's just this side of 50%. So we're talking about Oklahoma jobs, Oklahoma shareholders, and all of the contractors and subcontractors that work with those entities. So ignoring the impact of this on the economy is typical for those who try to advance environmental policy through litigation. As far as I'm concerned, I use the term, and I haven't been called down on it yet, so I'll use it today. It's as far as I'm concerned, it's environmental McCarthyism. So you identify these companies, you dehumanize and depersonalize them, and plug it into the theology of we've got to save the world. You've come up with a pretty toxic brew. We do our best to stay out of policy in the Oklahoma Attorney General's office. Like my colleagues, we issue opinions that have the force and effect of law. And so if we're always in the middle of policy, you're not going to be able to trust us on what our legal opinions are. This is policy. This needs to be in the legislature. It needs to be determined in Congress, particularly when we're dealing with national environmental policy. So the arbitrariness that we're seeing with these lawsuits that really have no basis in American legal jurisprudence. I mean, the idea that you can accuse somebody of creating a public nuisance and not show any specific injuries is inconsistent, again, with centuries of cases around how public nuisance applies in our country. There need to be specific injuries to individuals. So, for example, I'm going to do a compare and contrast about right and wrong. So sometimes businesses do bad things, and a number of us are pursuing litigation against opioid manufacturers. So there are direct cognizable impacts that have occurred in my state and in other states with regard to the deception around the sale of opioids. They're addictive, and they've caused our state and many states great damages. So you have specific cognizable injuries that have occurred with regard to your citizens. And we've approached that on a public nuisance basis. Public nuisance has no application to a theory that there is environmental impact that's being caused by manufacturers. So we take these cases very seriously. I took the opportunity, as did my colleagues, I think Leslie and Alan were both on this letter. We wrote the California Insurance Commissioner, who is attempting to shame California insurance companies from investing in entities that explore, produce, and develop fossil fuels. Insurance commissioners have no business directing or trying to hector their regulated entities into or out of investing in fossil fuel companies. And his pretext was that they were risky investments. And so the challenge is compare and contrast the risk associated with renewables, and renewables are an important part of how we produce energy in this country. But if you're going to be objective and if you're going to be honest about things, and you're really concerned about about risky investments, you need to go through that exercise, which he didn't do. It was just a pretext, again, to throw a bone to environmental interest groups in his state. So we wrote him that letter. We're still deciding whether to sue him or not. I'm not sure which is worse. Dave Jones is also running for Attorney General, and Mr. Becerra is the current Attorney General. So we're weighing our options there. But in short, the courts are no place to determine national environmental policy. And public nuisance is not a theory that judges should employ in these kind of cases.
Thank you very much, General. The Attorney General from Arkansas, Leslie Rutledge. General?
Yes. Thank you, Jay, and thank you, Nam, for inviting us to sit down with you all today, and appreciate you all being here and covering this. You know, the challenge with batting cleanup sometimes is that the batters before you strike out, and sometimes they all hit home runs. In this case, they all hit home runs. So I'm not going to be saying too much.
I'm glad you said that, because it would have been really bad if you said it struck out.
Well, you know.
Although it would have given them a lot more to write about.
I know, that would have been much more interesting. So, so I'm going to cover a lot of, you know, or kind of ditto what Alan and Mike and Jay have already said. But the question I have to answer at home to Arkansans, what each of us have to answer in our home states, is why is Arkansas getting involved in this case in California, or why would Arkansas care about what's going on in Colorado? And when you boil all the water out of it, what it comes down to is that what's being done in these cases will impact Arkansans, will impact folks in Oklahoma and in South Carolina and across the country, and even in states who did not join in, who were not part of this amicus brief, that this will have a far-reaching effect. And Arkansas alone, when we look at manufacturing jobs, we're looking at the numbers earlier, it's 12.5% employment. Well, that's a great deal of employment jobs, and when you have environmental policy being shoved down the throats of folks based out of California, out of Colorado, well, that impacts our ability to grow and create jobs in the natural state in Arkansas. As has been talked about by Alan predominantly with regard to cooperative federalism, Congress thought long and hard about this. You know, they often think long about issues, but on this they thought long and hard about it and making sure that the states were in a position to work cooperatively with the EPA on implementing things such as the Clean Air Act. That's why we have federal implementation plans or state implementation plans when it comes to things such as our regional haze. And by having localities such as what we've seen in California implementing their policy, claiming public nuisance, that, you know, should the courts uphold it, and that's why we're fighting this, that should the courts uphold it, it will impact us across the country. And so that's, you know, I think when you look at why it's so important that other states are involved in this, that's what it comes down to, is because this case is not about these jurisdictions in California. It's not about these businesses based in California or Colorado. It's about the impact it will have nationally. And so with that, I'm just going to wrap up and make sure that you all have plenty of time for questions. But I appreciate you all being here.
Thank you very much. How about if we just open it up to you all, and if you have some questions?
Yeah. So you're involved in this one case. Are you contemplating getting involved in any of the others? And is getting involved in the cases the same as stopping this wave of lawsuits, or do you have anything else strategy-wise that you can discuss?
Well, that's the goal, obviously, is to stop this wave. But how many cases are we actually involved in?
So there are 10 cases that are ongoing that we're that we've been tracking, and I think, you know, I'll let the AG speak for themselves about their intentions with the other cases, but it just so happens that the San Francisco and Oakland case is at a stage where there's an opportunity to file something, to weigh in formally in the case other than just to talk about it. So we're certainly looking at getting involved in as many as we can, as many as we need to.
Okay. I have a question. So the Supreme Court in AEP, I believe, ruled out suits brought under federal common law for greenhouse gas emissions, and kind of said this was in the realm of EPA. And I think, at least the impression I get, is that a lot of these suits are kind of stemming from the fact that there is no national greenhouse gas policy, that EPA kind of hasn't put that in place. You have the Clean Power Plan, but obviously that is tied up in court and in the process of being overturned. So I guess I'm just wondering if you, how much you see sort of a lack of federal policy kind of driving these suits, and would it be better if we had a you know, cohesive federal greenhouse gas policy in place?
Do you guys want to take this from the state perspective? Certainly.
Well, one of the things I guess I despair is that there's no attention given to, every state has an environmental regulator. And I got to tell you, our environmental regulator is tough. I know because my niece is an attorney at the Department of Environmental Quality in Oklahoma. And each year there's a sort of report card that DEQ has on their website. Alan, I'm sure you and Wesley have similar exercises with your state environmental entities. And we're consistently above what the requirements are for clean air and clean water in Oklahoma. So I wish there would be more attention given to the successes taking care of the environment that occur at the state level.
If there's going to be a national environmental policy that covers this area, for me, it should come out through public debate in a transparent form for the people's elected representatives, and it shouldn't come out through policy edicts from judges who may be wonderful people, great jurists, intelligent, but they're not scientists, and there's no debate about it. Every state is different. We have the Department of Health and Environmental Control. They have DEQ, is what you call it. Every state has their enforcer. And it would be important for each of those enforcement agencies to have their say at the federal level when discussing national policy. But what you're seeing here is an attempt, again, When they can't legislate something, they try to regulate it. When they can't regulate it, now they're litigating it. And that is not a way to implement national energy policy, through litigation by unelected judges, through no transparent, open debate.
Well, and just to, you know, agree with both of them, and I hate to keep sounding, beating that same drum, but that's exactly what we can't have is one judge or one, and it's really not even one judge so much as it is one group actively suing industries. And that's what we saw on the sue and settle issues involving the EPA, particularly during the prior administration, where those policies following that litigation were shoved down the rest of our throats. One size does not fit all, and that's what Mike was talking about. And I agree with Alan, the energy policy should be set at, or national energy policy should be set by congressional level, and then given certain authority to the EPA or to others, but it shouldn't be set by one group suing various industries, because while it may be the manufacturing industry now, or Exxon, BP, depending on what the industry is, those groups that are suing will move on to to other industries.
Can you elaborate a little bit on how, if these groups win this case, that means there's that's setting national energy policy?
Well, sure, because by winning this case and what they're saying with regard to public nuisance and these companies in this area, these are not companies that only operate in this one small jurisdiction. They operate across the board, and so as they look at what they have to do.
And sometimes they don't even operate in those jurisdictions at all, like Massachusetts.
Right, but that they could operate in that jurisdiction, so therefore we have an attorney general challenging those in Massachusetts, not an attorney general at this table, just so we're clear.
Do the results of the upcoming midterm elections have the potential to shift this lawsuit in any way, particularly like if the Republicans lost their majority in the House?
I don't know that.
We're looking at the courts right now.
So. Right.
So EPA does have authority under the Clean Air Act to regulate greenhouse gases. I'm sure you guys know kind of the long story to that, but there's an attempt right now to repeal and possibly replace the Clean Power Plan. And if there is a replacement, does that then address this issue? Does that satisfy you all? Would you support, greenhouse gas regulation under the Clean Air Act?
I think from a national manufacturing perspective, we'd have to actually see what the regulation says first. So if it's okay with you all, withhold judgment on that.
Okay.
But I would add that we provided 125 pages of comments on that particular regulation. So, we certainly are looking at it.
On the comments today that we're due today? Yeah, okay.
Well, we've talked a lot about litigation today. Maybe it's time to talk a little bit about democracy. For the life of me, I don't think anybody contemplated among the founding fathers that we'd have unelected bureaucrats making decisions that would cost Americans billions of dollars without an act of Congress. The regional haze plan imposed on my state is going to cost ratepayers $1 billion over the retooling that was imposed on our two major public utilities. The estimates that the Clean Power Plan and Waters of the United States would have cost the economy is almost incalculable. So we're back to policy here. These are important decisions that shouldn't be left to unelected bureaucrats. So I don't want to migrate into a big discussion about Chevron, but it's time we democratize this debate, it seems to me.
When I travel around South Carolina and I talk about policy and law and how they intersect and what comes out of government, what should come out of government, I've come up with somewhat of a five-way test. Everything that should come out of government should be responsible, predictable, accountable, profitable, stable.
How many pass that test?
I'm thinking about this litigation. If we're going to have national energy policy, it shouldn't come to the courts or through a patchwork of court decisions based on nuisance theory. That is not responsible. It is certainly does not create predictability in the market for those manufacturers that have to operate. And talking about the Manufacturers Accountability Project, who is accountable? How do you hold judges accountable who aren't scientists and who are making major decisions like this and effectuating national policy? There is nothing accountable about that. And finally, the last two that I mentioned, profitable and stable, they're really byproducts of the first three. The cost of complying with these regulatory mandates through the courts, if they're successful, as well as the lack of predictability, the cost of dealing with that has got to be borne by someone. The cost of litigation has to be passed to someone, whether it's the manufacturers or some other industry, and it's getting passed to the consumers, the people that use those products. And I think they have a right to have a say through their elected representatives in dictating what national energy policy should be. Again, this is not a knock on judges. They're very bright people, and they're there for a reason most of the time. But, a judge is not accountable and isn't going to have this transparent, is not going to be able to hear all the parties affected by this and how it's going to affect them down the chain. And so that is, again, as a matter of law, I support this amicus in this position, but as a matter of process and policy, I support it as well.
General Wilson talked about the consumers. What are the reasons, key reasons, that manufacturers are so concerned about these lawsuits is we actually are the nation's largest consumer of energy. One-third of the nation's energy supply is consumed by manufacturers. When you think about the millions and millions of people that manufacturers employ, and then you think about the consumers of our products and what this can do, to your point, driving up costs, driving up uncertainty, all of those things have a very detrimental impact on manufacturers.
And I think almost, this may be simplistic, but we have to take away from the folks who are bringing these lawsuits, that those of us who challenge them, that for some reason we don't believe in clean air and clean water. There is an emotional argument that is always brought by groups who are filing these lawsuits that we're against any responsible environmental regulations. And I think that is just absolutely false in every stretch that you could get to. My husband and I are farmers. We have a row crop farm in Arkansas. I grew up on a cattle farm. A seventh generation landowner. I can assure you that nobody cares more about the land and air and preserving it than folks in agriculture, but also property owners. And that's what, when Jay talks about the people who are working at these manufacturing operations, those are people who want their kids to go to good schools, who want them to be healthy and have good environments to live in. And so I think all of us are for responsible regulations and predictable regulations, but we are not interested in or having small groups put forth their own policy through this sort of litigation as opposed to going through the process.
The good news is that manufacturers are very invested in sustainability. We have been responsible over the course of the last 10 years for 19%.
So manufacturers reduce their emissions by 10%.
10%. And grow their economy by 19%.
Exactly.
And across the globe, our manufacturers, our energy industry are the most responsible. And that's when you look at what other nations are doing and what we're doing here. But what we don't want to do is to regulate ourselves to where we become dependent on other countries for our manufacturing needs, for our energy needs.
So maybe sort of along the similar lines, but kind of getting away slightly from this group of lawsuits, your colleagues on the other side of the aisle held a very similar roundtable a couple months ago, where they were sort of declaring victory.
I don't think they held it here.
Not here, no. where they were sort of declaring victory in the courts and pushing back against the Trump administration's deregulatory agenda. And it is true that the administration has lost a number of lawsuits when it comes to delaying Obama-era regulations, kind of the first step toward taking another look at them. And I guess I was kind of hoping maybe you could reflect on where we are in sort of the litigation saga. And one of the questions I have is, if the administration is losing, does that mean that they're maybe being a little too hasty in trying to roll back a lot of these regulations?
And I guess maybe I'm going to need you to point out some of those losses,
because
we feel pretty good about a number of the wins that we've had during the last administration.
Like Waters in the U.S., the
WOTUS.
Yeah,
right.
They point to like the EPA oil and gas methane regulations, where like the D.C. Circuit found that the stay, vacated the stay, and then there's been a couple pesticide rules where the administration has been found to have illegally stayed them. There's about maybe about six or seven lawsuits.
Yeah, I don't think six or seven lawsuits actually shows a pattern. What I would say was a pattern was over the 8 years, I think, Mike, you mentioned this, the theory that really became perfected during the last administration over sue and sell. And what you had is you had groups of activists that were suing, they were suing the regulators to try to get them to do something more onerous than many times than what was even being contemplated. And the agency would say, oh, yeah, okay, we're going to just settle this and let it happen. But that is no way to run a government, and that is no way to create predictability or accountability for government policy. And that harms manufacturers. It costs investment, it costs jobs, it costs wage and benefit increases. I think because that is now in the rearview mirror, that's why you're seeing such record optimism by manufacturers today. We just released a couple weeks ago, you may have heard it, I think it was 93.5% positive outlook for their companies and for the economy from manufacturers. That is unbelievably high, and that high number has found itself manifesting itself in our quarterly surveys every quarter for the last four quarters. And compare that to somewhere between, generally, I think the last positive one in the last administration was about 56%. So that's a huge increase. More importantly than that, because of the certainty that the regulatory environment is experiencing here now, and because of, quite frankly, and I know we're not here to talk about this, but because of a competitive tax policy, a record number of our manufacturers have said that they're going to invest, a record number have said they're going to hire, and a record number have said they're going to increase wages and benefits. That's good news for the workers in this country. It's good news for our nation when it comes to comparing ourselves with others economically throughout the world. So I personally think, six or seven cases, okay, I understand that there are going to be some differences of opinion. But we've put behind us that uncertainty that existed. And this particular issue, the jackpot justice that is trying to be achieved through these lawsuits, is that same type of uncertainty that will only lead to less investment, less jobs, and less wage growth. And then we need to kill it and make a graveyard debt and go on.
All federal courts, district and appellate, are not created equal. Some are more friendly to these arguments than others. They've had a few victories. The big picture, I know I speak for my colleagues, we're very comfortable with where we are. We're trying to get back to a reasonable approach to how the environment is regulated at the federal level.
And I'll say this, because this is a question that comes up so often. Manufacturers aren't against regulation. We never have been, nor will we be. We just want to make sure that regulations are transparent, they're science-based, that there is a full hearing, that there's input from localities, there's input from the affected constituencies, and that they're applied fairly across the board.
Now, I'm from South Carolina, so I'm guilty of doing this all the time, but I love to always use football as a metaphor for things.
We never do that in Oklahoma.
No, Arkansas and Oklahoma aren't into football at all.
So I went to Ohio State, so be careful.
Okay. I just will say we did beat Ohio State 2 years in a row in the Outback Bowl in 2001 and 2, but that's a whole nother.
I said, be careful, I'm a host.
I think the last time we beat y'all, then y'all were the national champs next year. But we all enjoy watching football, but can you imagine if there were no rules in football? That would not be a fun sport to watch, because all you do is you just have people holding people down all the time. You wouldn't be able to have a fun game to watch or a game to participate in. So we want rules in a game of football. But the rules everyone has to know what the rules are when they step out on the field. The rules have to be applied to both teams fairly, equitably, and equally. It benefits the fan base. It benefits the players. It promotes safety. I mean, we want safety. We want regulations. But how you get to the regulations, how you get to the ultimate end state is as important as to what you actually arrive at. And again, it's about the process. And the process by which they're trying to litigate national energy policy is not a good way to do it. And again, the cost of defending against these lawsuits, the cost of having to deal with the fractured regulatory environment, the cost of having to deal with the lack of predictability in the free market, that is going to get passed on to someone. And I will say this, this is just one anecdotal piece of information that I got. A very good friend of mine, Lou Kennedy, CEO of Nephron Pharmaceuticals, a pharmaceutical manufacturing company in Columbia, South Carolina. This is going back to the tax cuts, not germane to this conversation. But it goes to how, what good corporate citizens manufacturers are when they are allowed to have predictability and when they are allowed, when they are given more ability to move their capital around. Within 2 or 3 weeks of that tax cut, every 700 employees in her plant got a 5% pay increase. That just goes to what you just said, Jay. If we allow, if we give manufacturers a set of rules that protects the environment, protects consumers, which I think they would invite, but you do it in a fair, equitable, predictable way, and then you don't load them up with litigation to try to regulate them out of existence, they're going to be good stewards of the environment, they're going to take care of consumers, and they're going to produce profits for everybody in the free market.
Final questions?
I think I'm good. Thanks.
You good, Mike?
Yeah, that's it.
Thank you all.
Thank you all very much.
Appreciate your questions.
Sorry for the gratuitous Ohio State.
I'm sad.
Great help yourself. Can't help yourself.
Actually, I do brag about this. We beat y'all that second Outback Bowl. We're not sure we got a horrible year, but we were the last team to beat you.
Were you at the Kirby Center a few weeks back? I was there in February. Okay, I was there.
Did you cover that? Okay.
I didn't cover it, but I'm an alumna. So.
Okay. I was there with Ken Paxton. There were four AGs, Indiana, Nebraska, and Texas. And I came in late. I got some brief. So I was kind of the comic relief on the end, coming in late.
I appreciate it, but I was like, oh, you look familiar. I was trying to place it.
Well, if I can
there was something between
all you all, my contact info.
Oh, thank you.
Got my chief here with me, but just in case y'all ever need some follow up, then make sure. Thank you.
Oh, okay, well.
Thank you very much.
You and I were as well.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I guess you'd have more people here. Yeah, I guess you'd have gone. Oh, okay. How's that going? Pretty good. Right. Yeah. Okay. Carol, pretty. Can be a lot. Yeah. 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 Yeah
still carry on.
What's that?
I think it's supposed to be nice.
Oh, sure. I'm out of cars.
Are you sticking around or heading back?
No, I've got to get back tomorrow. I've got an event tomorrow night.
But I've got an internet site, so I need it. Needs it tracked in.
Saturday, so I'm hoping Sunday at the church I can get outside. And, you only get like a small window of like 70 degree weather. Because Arkansas is very akin to the D.C. weather. It's like cold, warm, humid, and hot.
Right.
So great. You've got a few little weeks there that you get to enjoy it.
I hope you get two. So.
Likewise.
Okay. Hey, I should be in Minnesota. They keep getting snow. It's starting to melt, but like I call my parents here. I'm like, it's starting to melt.
I'll
We do this all the time.
We really need bigger space. Is this where you want?
Yeah.
General, how are you?
Good.
All right, we're coming in.
Nice to meet you. Off with glasses.
Where you want me?
Okay.
Look in the middle.
Leslie, get in the middle. You're the girl.
Oh.
Man, I would swap them.
She loves it.
It's a nice little.
I don't think you want to pick a fight.
They are. Can we get those?
I got that in.
Let me sort of get the best looks.
But y'all don't run,
y'all don't run off, let me.
Okay, more.
One, two, three.
Can you tell the Arkansas one down with the camo? Phone cover.
That's a good answer.